You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
The music of tomorrow is being written today. The music of tomorrow is almost ready to play.
Experience the musicals of tomorrow today. Get a glimpse inside the blueprint of an original musical being developed in real time. With New York Theatre Barn's podcast, The Musicals of Tomorrow.
The music of tomorrow.
I'm Joe Barros.
And I'm Jen Sandler.
And we're the hosts of The Musicals of Tomorrow. As the Artistic Director and Associate Artistic Director of New York Theatre Barn, we make space to speak in community with musical theatre writers and their creative teams.
Lifting up songs from original culture-shifting musicals in development and introducing them to a global audience has become a major part of New York Theatre Barn's evolving story.
Each original musical's intention, content, and journey are unique and extraordinary to the storytellers who create them. We believe that there is no formula for musical theatre except authenticity.
We recently spoke with one of the writers of Bastard Jones, Amy Englehart, and the writers of Perpetual Sunshine and the Ghost Girls, Sarah Cooper and Lynn Schenkel.
Our first musical is Bastard Jones, which has a book by Mark Acedo, music by Amy Englehart, and lyrics by Acedo and Englehart.
Bastard Jones is a sexy, smart, rollicking new musical comedy that combines a bouncy pop score with period farce. When charming, lowborn Tom makes the mistake of wooing Sophia Shepherd, daughter of the pompous Reverend Shepherd, a chain of secrets, schemings, and multiple bed hoppings are set in motion. Based on Henry Fielding's 1749 Brit Lit satire, Tom Jones, this musical reimagines the young, irresistible, foundling Tom Jones as an electric guitar and a harpsichord world.
And now, here's our conversation with one of the writers of Bastard Jones, Amy Englehart.
Hello.
So let's dive in. Amy, you are a dear friend of mine and a collaborator on this show. You were well known as
Bastard Jones.
I did at The Cell, and we'll definitely talk more about Nancy Manicharian's The Cell and Kirsten Ring, who runs the joint over there. You are well known as the sole female vocalist and writer for the Grammy-nominated genre-busting vocal band The Bobs. And from 1998 to 2012, you recorded 4 albums and toured the U.S. and Europe. Wow. Your original works include Triptych, Carl Sagan's Contact, Tesla, a comedy of eras with the Flying Karamazov Brothers, and Impact, which just premiered in a streaming presentation produced by The Cell. You've also released numerous albums that I love to listen to. One of my favorite songs you've ever written is called Cheese Denied, and I have no idea why you'd ever write a song about cheese. But...
I don't wish that on anyone, Cheese Denied.
Cheese is amazing.
The song is on iTunes. It's called Cheese Denied. Your co-conspirator in this show is Mark Acedo. Mark is best known as the co-writer of the musicals Allegiance, A Room with a View, and Chasing Rainbows. And in 2016, Mark became the first Broadway writer to create a new musical in China, The Secret, which features the songs of Jay Chou, the king of Mondo Pop. I also wanted to note that Mark's novel, How I Paid for College, was on many bestseller lists and has been translated into 5 languages and was also turned into a solo play and spawned a sequel, Attack of the Killer People. As Amy mentioned, I had the great privilege of collaborating with Amy and Mark on the 2017 Off-Broadway production produced by The Cell. And for those who don't know, again, I was the choreographer and I had an extraordinary time living and creating in this world with you and Mark. Another reason I wanted to do the show was to work with Evan Ruggiero, who played the title role and won multiple awards for his performance. What I also found really compelling is that the story is ultimately about young people who were thrown out of their homes for being themselves. Your show explores an inspired and inventive way into the 18th century world of Tom Jones. What was the impetus for your collaboration with Mark Acedo, and why Tom Jones?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned his book, because that was the impetus for our collaboration. People kept recommending his book to me, and when enough people did, I said, okay, and I read it, and I usually don't laugh at funny books, but I saw myself in the book. because it's How I Paid for College, and a novel of sex, friendship, and musical theater. It's set in New Jersey in the 1980s. And this kid, you know, he wants to go to college and he can't, and he finds a way to pay for it. And it's also a coming out story. And there's characters in it who say things like I would say. Like, there's one character, a best friend, who says, lead us not into Penn Station. And I was like, I'm sure I've said that. Wait a second.
I would say this too, as an also New Jerseyan.
There you go. And so I recognized things in the book too. And I looked on the back cover and I saw that he went to Westfield High School, which is two towns away from me. And and all of a sudden, this is the crazy version. All of a sudden I was like, I know Mark Aceto, but I'm not sure it's him. And it turns out we met for one day in high school and forgot about each other, like forever. And the book brought us together. So I met him in Portland when the Bobs were playing in Portland in 2010. Yes, it took that long to get a production of Master Jones. That's pretty normal. And we wrote the first act in 6 weeks. We didn't know each other. He said, what are you doing this summer? I said, I don't know. What am I doing this summer? But he pitched.
Writing with him. That's what you're doing.
Yeah, I had no gigs. It was, you know, 2010. I was contemplating leaving the Bobs, and I drove up to Portland, and he got me a place to stay. And neither of us at that point had written a full-length musical. We both had started in theater and then gone in different directions. I was doing theater until my, I guess, early 20s, and then I went straight into music, pop, rock, and jazz. But I always kept an ear to the ground. So Mark pitched Tom Jones to me, and I had not heard of it, and I said okay. And he said, because of what you do in the Bobs, which is kind of out there and not afraid to go, as we say, balls to the wall, and is more about commitment, I think, than and audacity than anything else, he said, I love where your ear goes and what you write. So I watched the movie, with a Oscar-winning movie, and the BBC series from the 90s with Samantha Morton and Brian Blessed, I think, and Fiona Shaw. Ah, I love Fiona Shaw. I'm a huge Anglophile. And we started working. And I have to say that in the beginning, Mark was drawn to this because we saw it as a gay marriage story, as why can't you love someone? Why are you not allowed to love someone because of how you were born? Because gay marriage had not yet been legalized. As the years went by, and we were, you know, using draft after draft, it was legalized, but we gradually realized that if you substitute any word for any marginalized group in Bastard Jones, you get the same story. And so it kind of became a mission for us. And then when we got this production at The Cell, which we raised all of the money to do, yes, it can be done, people. Mm-hmm. We bridesmaided so many times. We were top 10 finalists for the Richard Rogers, top 10 twice for the O'Neill. I mean, stuff like that. We had other offers, and it just told us we were on the right track.
Well, and what was so exciting about this production is that it had a cast that looked like the world. So,
yeah, we were kind of, I want to say, sadly ahead of that discussion curve, because I think it should have been had a long time ago. But we knew that we wanted a cast that looked like the world, that looked like America, 20% of whom has some sort of disability. And so Evan Ruggiero, who you mentioned, who's amazing, is an amputee. He lost his leg to bone cancer in 19.
Yes.
But he's a tap dancer. Ali B. Gori, who is now an activist for performers with disabilities, was also in it, and she is legally blind. We also had, you know, every race, ethnicity.
You had now Lortel winner Crystal Lucas-Perry, who is more of an unknown at that point.
She's
so many great people.
And was going to play John Adams in the all-female 1776, I think.
Yeah, she's still well. It got delayed, but it's still happening.
We were so blessed with the most fabulous cast.
This cast included Cheryl Stern, Eleanor Larry,
Adam Shapiro.
That's right.
Later, who did Fiddler with Joel Grey.
He did.
And Tony Perry.
And I just want to note, you know, like we said, Evan was such a big bright spot of that show, and he won the Clive Barnes Award for Promising Young Performer that year. He was also nominated for a Cheetah Rivera Award and a Drama Desk show, and your show was also nominated for an Off-Broadway Alliance Award for Best New Musical. So that production was a bright spot in so many ways and exciting, and such an exciting start for your show in that way.
I'm really thrilled. And yeah, it was so great to have Evan in the cast. And we cast him first, actually. Mark found him and we had a private session with him, and I'll never forget, Joe was there at the Cell. I think it was February. The show went up in June, and Joe turned to Evan and said, show me everything you can do. And because it's about what people can do, mm-hmm. you know? And he was absolutely phenomenal. He's had the chops that I wanted, which is both a legit and a rock voice, because I write for both. And we just kind of knew. And he had the right sense of greenness to him, because even though Tom sleeps with, you know, anything that moves, it's not predatory. He's a joy whore.
And for anyone that doesn't know Evan, his story is just so inspiring. You know, he yeah. was in the middle of college and, you know, got bone cancer and said, I'm going to still tap, was tapping beforehand. The minute his doctor told him after his amputation that he could tap again, he yeah. went for it. And it's a story that I hope makes a lot of people dance who think they can't dance anymore.
Totally.
For sure.
You know, it's what I did for love.
Tell us more about your development path before The Cell, because I know you had a NAMT residency, you worked with Milken University, just so many places to get you to this big production.
Yeah, we it was kind of strange. First, we did a table read with friends just to see if we had anything, just to hear it. Great friends, including Storm Large. I think you guys know who she is. She's mm-hmm. a kind of underground performer. She, of course, played the evil Lady Bellaston, later played by Crystal Lucas Perry. We had table reads. We made a demo far too early, a studio demo here in LA, because I know people who helped us out. And I was very fortunate to, since I'm in the singer community here, I was very fortunate to have amazing friends who helped with it. Or as Evan said, sick tenors. and we made this demo. We sent it out to everyone we possibly could, and we got some interesting reactions, and we sent the first draft out, and we knew when we got into the O'Neill the first time with the first, when we got, we're finalists, we're like, huh, okay. All right, I guess this is a thing. We did some development work with Jerry Patch from Manhattan Theater Club. He gave me the note that totally changed my, one note, that like changed my perspective on a bunch of orchestration and a bunch of choices. We replaced the opening number, which is originally called Cock of the Walk, which, hello, because that's, come on, that phrase is a gift when you're talking about a period piece. We refocused it, and we got the development workshop at Milliken, which was so helpful. Submit to that, writers. It is so helpful. Even though we saw people who did not have the age range appropriate for the characters, wow, it was an eye-opener. We needed to see a certain sequence done. There's a sequence at the end of this first act that has, it's basically slapstick farce, The Three Doors. And we needed to see that on its feet to know if it worked pacing-wise. It's a 7-minute thing. It has reprises and comedy, and it's crazy.
It has a lot of physical comedy. You just mentioned that you rewrote the opening number, which was originally called Cock of the Walk, and is now called The Pursuit of Happiness. It's actually our first song tonight.
So here is The Pursuit of Happiness.
Juicy peaches fall from trees about to burst. Flowers beckon to the bees to quench their thirst. Passion pulses through my blood, rapture rushes like a flood. I'm inside and I just ride. The pursuit of happiness is a natural right. The pursuit of happiness, morning, noon, and night. Oh, happiness so warm and blazing bright. Show me a meal I'll always eat. Show me a babe who isn't sweet. The road on a bed, I'm on my feet. For happiness! Ooh. Lightning bears electric force from kai to ki. I'm like thunder on a horse that's wild and free. Let's surrender to the surge. Let's attend to every urge as we lavender. What's life about? The pursuit of happiness is a natural right. The pursuit of happiness, morning, noon, and night. 'Cause happiness is that electric curve. I'm gonna bite more than I chew. I'm gonna drink until I spew. Plenty for me and more for you. Like this, and this, and this, and this, yeah. And the pursuit of happiness. Everybody can sing now. Happiness. Beggar, maid, or king, at the root of happiness, the heart is everything. Show me the world, I'll go explore. I'm waiting for. Order me up a plenty more. Happiness, oh baby, happiness, yeah.
Yay.
Just makes me smile.
Mm-hmm.
We treated a really serious subject with comedy, and we approached it from a farcical angle.
Absolutely. And it's not, the way Henry Fielding ever envisioned it, but I think the show needs to be turned like this. And I think it's so important, and it sees the material in a really exciting a new way.
Yeah, so we were so thrilled with it. And we were so thrilled with the Cell production. And it was just a wonderful experience. And we got the show we wrote, which is saying a lot.
Your theater barn has collaborated with the Cell many times. It's an amazing, amazing space in New York here.
One of our homes.
The next song tonight from Bastard Jones is the title song, which was sung by Cheryl Stern in the original production. And you're going to be singing it. And I love you on the demo. So I'm excited to hear what you are going to do tonight. If you want to just set it up, that would be great.
Sure. This song is sung by Bridget Allworthy, who is kind of the spinster-esque sister of Squire Allworthy, who adopted Tom Jones, the bastard who we found in his bed. And Bridget has a really vile and unctuous son named Blifil. And what has just happened is there's an accident with a carriage that the squire is involved in. And Tom Jones, having a heart of gold, rushes in to help. What can I do? And takes care of this pregnant town slut, blah, blah, blah. And he moves her, makes sure she's okay. She was in the way. And so he takes care of her while her son just stands there basically and looks down at the whole thing and insults people. And she's very taken and moved by this fact that, the person that everyone reviles is the person that saved the day, and her son did nothing. So she's contemplating that in this, the title track.
Take it away.
When a low-born heart can bleed such kindness, it reminds us of God. And when your own heart is cold, consumed by blindness, you hate yourself. A child of love, your soul's extension has no comprehension of good. And yet
yet a bastard boy, has pure intentions, yet still is misunderstood. Then she dies.
I just love it. And Cheryl Stern would walk down the aisle in that ghostly light. This character, I said, she's dying in a rock musical, and she gets just enough strength to belt the bridge.
That's theater for you. You got to belt that bridge, and then you croak.
Yeah, and actually, Mark did the, on the demo, that's Mark dying, doing all the He did the birthing noises when we originally had Bridget giving birth in the original open. He was the, like giving birth. I'm like, how do you know this? He did it really well. And so I kept
method acting and tight casting. Well, Amy, we have to head out. Thank you so much for being with us. And we loved sharing these two songs.
Absolutely. And we'll see you soon.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFF's creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFF's The Original New Musical from Shayna Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Our second new musical is Perpetual Sunshine and the Ghost Girls, which has words by Sarah Cooper and music by Lynn Schenkel.
Perpetual Sunshine and the Ghost Girls is an all-woman positive, three-composed musical theater piece about the capitalist exploitation of workers' bodies and rights in the face of a national public health crisis. Featuring an original mashup score, the show is based on the true story of the women who worked in the factories and were knowingly poisoned by the United States Radium Corporation, and who fought back, changing the United States labor laws forever.
And now, here's our conversation with the writers of Perpetual Sunshine and the Ghost Girls, Sarah Cooper and Lynn Schenkel.
Hi, guys!
Hi!
Sarah, I first saw your work off-Broadway, The Memory Show, an incredible musical, which had a celebrated run at the Duke Theater, produced by Transport Group, after it was featured in NAMM and at Barrington Stage Company. You're also the writer of Hot, featured in our New York series with Lynn. And you've also written Windows and Breakfast, Fault Lines, and Elevator Heart. Your television pilot, Pollyanna, received the Grand Jury Prize from Bolt, Barnstorm Media, and you are a Jonathan Larson Grant Award winner, which is awesome. Lynn, and in addition to being an incredible writer, you are also best known as a music supervisor, arranger, and orchestrator. As the orchestrator of Broadway's Allegiance, you were the first woman to solely orchestrate a new musical on Broadway, which is an incredible thing. Your other iconic works include Crybaby, the 2006 revival of Company, Altar Boys, the Broadway revival of Your Good Man, Charlie Brown, which was the first show I ever saw on Broadway. And Jodie,
a million years ago.
Jody Picco's Breathe, which I'm also a part of, and your work, Lynn, is the heart and glue of the show. As a composer, your work includes Hot with Sarah, as I mentioned, Postcard American Town with the extraordinary Crystal Skillman, which was featured in our New Work series, new songs for the revival of Bear, Maya, and Red Velvet. In 2017, you released a critically acclaimed album called Bare Naked on Yellow Sound label, and I love two songs from it. Jen Colella sings a song called I Will Make Thunder, and Casey Levy sings a song called Anything Can Happen. So I just wanted to say everybody should listen to that. Anyway, let's dive into this show here. The story of many factory workers who became disabled or died from radium poisoning has been buried in our history for far too long. Female identifying factory workers who contracted radiation poisoning from painting watch dials with self-luminous paint after being told that the paint was harmless is something that we're talking about here. The recent film Radium Girls follows a group of ill factory co-workers who set out to expose a corporate cover-up. There's also been a musical adaptation that explores this premise, including Julie Stein's 1953 Broadway musical, Hazel Flag. So, Sarah and Lynn, how did you come to collaborate, and what makes your musical's approach to this premise unique?
Our origin story is Lynn was the orchestrator on The Memory Show, music by Zach Redler, who's lovely. And I just fell madly in love with Lynn's music, and I like always wanted to work with her, and I was kind of like, we started thinking about things we could collaborate on. I don't remember exactly how we came to Hot, but we just like kind of emailed back and forth. And then we were like, this is the thing. And we got together.
Yeah, you sent me a draft of Hot, and you were like, oh, I don't know what this is, but I know it's not a play, and it might be a musical, and see what you think. So yeah, that's where it all began.
That's right. I thought it was going to be play. And then I was like, Lynn, come say
so wrong. It's so wrong. And then it was, gosh, I mean, we worked on Hot, writing that for like a year. And then you threw me an email one day about having this idea for this crazy show about the women who worked at the U.S. Radium Factory in the 1920s.
I had never heard the story. I just saw a clickbait thing for it on Facebook. And I was like, what is this? And I like clicked through the rabbit hole, which you should never do because you'll get a virus. But I didn't that day, and instead on the show. And I don't know. I was just like, I thought about it for a while. And then Lynn and I started talking about it, and I kind of like we were busy with Hot, and then we went to like the Johnny Mercer Foundation Writers Grove, and we were working on Hot, and we were kind of like talking about it, and I had sort of vomited out some stuff for it, but and then like I don't know, and then we like talked about it, and we just started writing it. But I actually have a weird story about it. Can I tell my okay?
You have
a weird story. So I vomited out this weird thing that is not very much like what we ended up with. But 3 weeks, just like, eh, like this crazy, crazy draft of something. And the day after I finished it, I was at a family gathering, and my Uncle Fred was like, what are you working on? And I was like, oh, and I told him sort of what it was about. And he's like, oh, that's so strange. Your great aunt worked in one of those factories. And I was like writing it like I was possessed. It was like, Lynn will tell you, it was like this crazy, it was very weird. She was not one of the women who was doing the watches, but she survived this situation, but very weird.
We love stories like that. You know, we also have, you know, Kira Stone, who you're collaborating with, Sarah, and she's writing, Joe knew I was going to say this, and she's writing a musical called Salem, and found right. out that one of her descendants was a part of that trial, and she's so playing that part now. So we love when these kind of coincidental things happen that kind of make your fabric with the story even that much stronger.
Yeah.
Totally. So was this always going to be a show that was a full-length musical? Because you know, your journey with this kind of properly started during the pandemic when you won the NAMM 15-minute musical challenge.
Yeah, I mean, it was always going to be a longer piece. I mean, we envisioned it to be kind of a companion piece to Hot, in that it's also a one act. It's also performed by a completely female identifying cast. And I had not written one note before, you know, the pandemic hit. And then, you know, we're all at home, and I'm, you know, sitting in this very room thinking, what am I going to do now? And, you know, and we were like, let's just work on this. And we had just started working on it when, you know, NAMM announced this competition. And it was kind of the greatest thing, because it was a goal. And I just felt like, for me, I need goals, you know, or I'll just like sit on things, you know, forever. But having that goal was so huge in, you know, in just getting it out of the gate and getting it, you know, and getting it done. Yeah, we took the first 15 minutes of the show and applied for the NAMM competition, and we were one of the first place winners, and which was so exciting. And Yeah, it was amazing. And that led us to being able to work with the fabulous students at Baldwin Wallace College, led by Vicki Bussert and Matthew Webb. And they took that 15 minutes. They did a thing which was so cool called the 5x15 Festival. They did it for their winter, you know, what would have been their winter musical. They performed all five of the first place winners.
In collaboration with the Beck Center in Chicago.
Exactly. And they videoed, you know, made a 15-minute musical out of each one of these pieces and filmed them and just did them to the nines. And it was incredible. It was so cool.
And their students are like unbelievably like out of this world. We could not even believe.
We were so lucky. Mm-hmm.
And I think what's so cool about this competition, you know, we also have the brilliant Nico Juber. Nico Juber was a finalist and won. We had the musical Mimosa was also a part of it. And all of these writers have said that this competition came during such a dark time, and it gave you so much confidence that you were in the right direction with the story you were trying to tell.
Totally. Mm-hmm. It was, yeah, just so, so fantastic.
So let's hear more about the first song you're going to present with us that is featuring the Baldwin Wallace students that we're so excited about.
Yes, it's the opening number, so we don't want to say too much.
Lights up. Yeah, but this is like Vicki and Vicki Bussert and Matt Webb and their students actually made this. And this was the first chunk of what we saw in their collaboration with Beck Center. I don't think this would be Lights Up. And then
exactly.
And they'll tell you what you need to know. And I just want to shout out, there are so many students at Baldwin Wallace that are so talented. I just want to shout out all of them. We have Caitlin Bauman, Piper Bruce, Colette Caspari, Audrey Hare, Autumn Key, Jesse Kirtley, Eden Mao, Claire Marie Miller, Alexa Lopez, Andy Peterson, Lauren Senden, and Bella Serrano. So without any further ado, here is Perpetual Sunshine.
They call it perpetual sunshine, bottled attraction, chain reaction, a cure for the living dead. That's what the advertisement said. Where's that shimmer coming from? All that glitters is radium. You are positively glowing, a beauty in your prime. A star never even knowing, your fall is all through time. Preserve your youthful twinkles. Who would notice wrinkles when you're shining from within? Never dull and always thin. A household name that's all the rage. A promise that you'll never age. You are positively glowing. Climb up several social notches is to get a job in the factory,
painting faces onto watches with radium, radium, radium.
They did a great job with that.
It was just, it just felt so spot on. Like, it was super, super exciting.
Well, Vicki Bussert and Baldwin Wallace are an incredible institution. Mm-hmm. So. Awesome. Well, tell us about our second song tonight.
So this song is called The Music of Tomorrow, and it happens, like, I don't know, it's like the fourth song?
Yeah, thereabouts, yeah.
And our main character's name is Marie, and right after the song that you just saw, she arrives at this factory in New Jersey in 1922, and she's, like, ready to take on this job. She's just been hired. It's, like, this really fancy job in real life, but also in our show, to be chosen to get poisoned by radium. But she has this goal to become the first woman manager of the factory, which has never happened before because it's 1922. So at this point in the show, she feels like she has a chance at doing this. She rushes home to tell her mom about her goals, and her mom's like, don't try to become a manager. You should marry a manager. And so she's like, doesn't know what to do. So she sort of steps out of the moment and sings this song.
And this song is performed by the wonderful Layla Shea, who is, we're doing all college tonight. She's a class of 21 from University of Michigan, where I teach part-time. And she did this song as part of their, let's see, beginning of pandemic. So winter, their winter show was a thing called the Ghostlight series, and different students did a mishmash of all kinds of exciting new material and material that the students wrote. And anyway, I was so honored that they wanted to include A Piece of Mind. Yeah, and so this is Layla Shea, and I want to give a shout out. The track that we're about to hear, this orchestration, the last one was me. This next orchestration is my buddy, August Eriksmoen, who is a genius, and I adore him. So shout out to him for this track. And this is Layla Shea performing in the Ghostlight series.
So here is The Music of Tomorrow.
You don't hear me when I tell you who I'm gonna be. You don't even hear a word. You don't believe that soon the world is gonna change its tune. But that's just because you haven't heard. I wanna scream and shout all the things that can't be said. I've gotta let it out, 'cause it's been stuck inside my head. The music of tomorrow ready to play, and the sweet song of me is gonna ring out loud and free with all the voices in the women's chorus, and no one will be able to ignore us. The music of tomorrow. A single beat. My heart is in my throat. I'm singing loud and clear, and I play it all by ear. 'Cause I'm gonna hit the highest note. Curtains are rising now. music of tomorrow was being written yesterday. I wish that the whole world could hear the things you had to say.
It's very much an anthem for our times.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's a song we're going to have a lot of people wanting to sing at auditions, honestly. It's such an anthem and such a great song.
Well, thank you both so much. We hope everyone sings it.
But we hope to get a time when we can all stop singing it.
Yeah, right? I know, exactly. It would be nice to have a reason to not sing it, I guess.
Yeah. It's going to be outdated.
Exactly. Yes, I would love to live to see that. It be outdated. But for now, I want everybody to sing it.
Agreed.
Well, we hope that, you know, your show does really, it's a cautionary tale, but that it really inspires change and makes us really, you know, holds a mirror up to our lives, because I think it's quite apropos for a lot of things we're discussing and examining.
It's still happening today, unfortunately, more than we realize. It's important that you're exposing this and bringing attention to it.
It was really interesting digging into this during the pandemic and just with the weird crossovers of what happened in that factory with these people being poisoned. And then, you know, we're writing it while we're all locked away in our homes so that we don't catch this crazy disease that could kill us. I mean, it was very eerie and just wild. The site of that factory is just about 20 minutes from where I live. It's like, there's nothing, there's a park there. The factory is long gone. But I don't even know if there's a memorial over there. I'm going to go over there and look. I want to just go and, you know, explore now that the weather's nice and see if there's anything there, because I'm not sure that there is. And I find that shocking.
Like, you look at how frontline workers are being discarded again. It's like the same exact thing, this constant like capitalist exploitation of workers.
Yeah.
It is unfortunately timeless, I think.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. But, you know, we hope that this sheds a light it needs to and we see the change we need.
Thanks. We hope so, too.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, thank you both so much, Lynn Schenkel and Sarah Cooper, and also Amy Englehart from before.
Yay, Amy.
So many fabulous women tonight that you need to know if you don't.
Awesome. Well, thank you both so much for being here. Lynn, Sarah, your pieces are always incredibly thoughtful, exciting, and we so appreciate you being here, and we can't wait to see more from you. Oh,
thank you so much for having us. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Jen.
We love you. Thank you.
Of course. Yay. We'll see you soon.
If you enjoy The Musicals of Tomorrow, please rate, subscribe, and share. The podcast is co-produced and edited by Paul Mox and Hector Flores Jr. Our theme song, The Music of Tomorrow, was written by Lynn Schenkel and Sarah Cooper for their all-female identifying musical, Perpetual Sunshine and the Ghost Girls. Join us next time for more of The Musicals of Tomorrow.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.